Gettysburg Seminary presents the Seminary Explores podcast. Conversations on faith, art, people, politics, theology, life, and more. With voices from around the corner and around the globe.
Good day. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers. My name is Nelson Strobert, and my guest today is Fritz Foltz, Pastor Emeritus, St. James Lutheran Church, here in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. Welcome to the Seminary Explorers.
Thank you very much.
To begin our conversation, I want to say that I know you as a parish pastor, but also pastor scholar, and you've been interested in science and technology. And yet in the past, in the past couple of months, I've heard you talk about friendship. And so I'd like to ask you, how did you go from science and technology to friendship?
Primarily because what I really study is the effects of science and technology on society. And I got very interested in how it has affected personal relationships. And that came from a variety of events. One, just having a conversation with someone who regarded himself as a professional friend. And then realizing that in a number of my readings, writers I really respect in that field, the effects of science and technology in society, felt that friendship was the way to restore or sustain the classical good characteristics of traditional society.
Okay, well, you've mentioned a couple of things in that response. One, I'd like to ask you, what is a professional friend? I've never heard that term before.
Well, why don't I tell you the conversation? Because I think it's intriguing.
Okay.
The summer guy sits down beside me, obviously wants to talk to me. He tells me that this was at a wedding, that the groom is his best friend because he always helped him. He said, in his words, I lost three wives, two fiancés, and a daughter. And this guy has been with me all the time. I thought, interesting. Friendship is someone who supports you. But then I said, well, what do you do? He said, I work at the Flamingo Hotel or a casino in Las Vegas. And I said, and what's your role? He said, well, he said, you might not understand this, but I am a friend.
Okay.
And I said, well, what in the world do you mean? He says, technology has really changed. He said, the gambling industry. He said, I've been with it my whole life. And he said, before there was, it has made everything silent. Everything's digital and silent. I said, before you heard the jingle of coins, you heard the jackpot.
Exactly.
People around you would celebrate with you. He said, all that's gone. He said, today everything is digital. Everything is silent. He said, chances are if you win the jackpot, you pull out your cell phone and dial up your wife who's far away.
<That's right. laughs>
So I said, that's where I come. He said, I meet the people. I greet them. I keep them busy in conversation. And when they win, I celebrate with them. He said, I'm their friend.
Well, that's intriguing.
Yes,
intriguing.
It is.
And I never heard, I've never heard of that term or someone being in that role.
Well, one of the reasons that intrigued me, Nelson, was I was asked to be a professional friend probably 25 years ago.
Okay, you're going to have to explain that, too.
a Southern evangelist, who was at that time a chaplain of the Washington Redskins, decided that he was going to begin start a business of professional friendship. And it had to do with celebrities who had no friends. They were surrounded by yes people
right. And
had no friends. So he asked my partner and me to be his substitutes if he wasn't available in central Pennsylvania. And I still remember his illustration. He said, if an executive at Hershey needs a friend, someone they can talk to honestly, and I'm not available, we'll send you up for a price. So I thought, how vulgar, but here's this guy, that's who he is.
That's right, exactly. Oh, indeed, that's intriguing.
But then stop and think that on television all the time. You're told you have a friend at the bank. Your doctor is your friend. Once when I was talking about this, the youth director at another church where I go said, you know, I never thought of myself as a professional friend, but I am. You know, I'm paid to be a friend of the youth in this parish. I'm a professional friend. So it's intriguing.
Yeah, very intriguing. But let's look at the historical development of friendship. It seems to me that friendship has changed in terms of how one defines friend, and yet friendship has been a part of society and particularly the Christian tradition for a long time.
Absolutely, and it was part of John's tradition. Remember at very important time, Last Supper. Right. Jesus says, "You know, I'm now going to call you friends, not disciples, because I have shared everything with you." A definition of friendship, and because you know, I'm willing to give my life for you. You know, a friend's greater love than no one that gives your life for your friend. So John isn't working his whole idea of friendship.
Exactly. Are there other examples for our listening audience that come to mind for you?
Well, I would say that once you stop and think of that, then you begin to realize, hey, Jesus did not have he had a band of friends, a group of friends with whom he traveled, not family. And he had, the early church saw themselves, although they used terms like brothers and sisters, if you really got down to it, they saw themselves as a band of friends imitating Jesus, doing what Jesus did.
And carrying on what Jesus did.
Right.
Yeah, very much so.
And the early church fathers talk about this extensively. You know, we don't today, but they did.
Okay, some examples of the early church fathers that might be helpful to our listening audience.
Ambrose was the first, and he spoke primarily about sharing.
Okay,
and I was just looking here. He said, friends open their hearts to each other, sharing their deepest thoughts, their hopes and fears, their joys and sorrows. And the church fathers often reflect in that and talk about, okay, what is this sharing involved in friendship?
Exactly.
And you stop and think, you would talk about Christians are companions, they share food together. They share their belongings or possessions. So that sharing aspect came out. But I thought it was interesting that other church fathers brought up things we normally wouldn't think about. One, like Augustine, followed sort of Plato when he said that friendship had to where friends shared with one another seeking knowledge. Remember, Plato spoke of knowledge being in a context of the symposium,
right?
Which isn't a lecture to a class; it's a drinking party after a meal, and this is the way to knowledge. And Augustine was following that, and then there was a guy in the 12th century, Alred, who spoke of friendship as a means of grace, the sacramental, that friendship allowed you to become friends in this life and then become friends in the next.
Oh, that's very powerful and
isn't
interesting.
It? Yes.
Yeah. As we talk about the communion of saints, it's the communion of friends.
And it's so much in the sense that one of the questions the early fathers asked was, is a lifetime friendship eternal? In other words, not only will I be with my... We normally say, will I be with my pet?
Exactly.
But they ask, will we... Or my wife, my husband.
Right.
But the question very often was, at the death of a friend, will I meet my friend
on the other side.
Yeah.
Oh my, very much so. When you look at friendship, when you look at young people, because I know you continue to work with young people,
right?
You know, and I see young people as, well, they're in a different era. And so when I look at Facebook, I had one student who said that she had 250 friends. You know, how do you see young people looking at and defining friendship?
Well, at least those that meet in our home, keep it in bounds. You know, they realize the limits of the social networking through electronically. You know, that they'll talk about, you can get rid of your friend by just pushing a button. Or that you know, and sometimes they say, they usually talk to me as if, you know, sometimes we want to have this narrow band relationship. We would rather text someone than talk to them personally because we don't want an emotional answer. We just want yes or no, like or dislike, or a tricky comment, but not really getting too involved.
Not in the depth, right.
Yeah. I see that as but it's worth going on to talk about what I find with these kids. My wife and I still have a high school reading group, which we've had it for decades. And in that group, the secret is Faith Ann prepares a fine dinner. And I mean a fine dinner. Never pizza. It's a fine dinner.
Okay.
Well, it used to be with candles. I'll lead a discussion, and it's lead a discussion. You know, I do very little talking on a topic they chose the month before.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one rule, and that is no put downs. And they understand what's going on, that we want to have a situation of honesty in which people can really talk about important subjects uninhibited. And it works very well, you know.
Friendship, they're friends within the group?
Yes.
And now, do they invite, let's say, other friends to be a part of the group?
Yes. And it has, you know, although this is essentially a Lutheran group, they've invited Roman Catholic friends. One of the groups has a Jewish woman in it. It seems to me that this having conversation over meals with decent topics, you know, seeking knowledge, leads to trust, and invites hospitality as well.
Right, and which is difficult in this day and age, it seems to me. So what do you see as the challenges to friendship in our contemporary society?
I would say technology. I mean, everything I read, and I read a lot about this, is that the sociologists don't even talk about family and friends. They talk about personal relationships. And they talk about how they have been very much reduced to transactions between people on emotional basis. By a transaction, I mean someone says, "Let's be friends," or "Let's get married,"
right,
because we suit one another emotionally.
Right.
But he said that's very brittle because as soon as you don't suit me,
right,
I cast you off.
That's right. We leave or we depart.
Yes. And one of the reasons this seems to be happening, I'd say it is happening, is because where we used to, things which we used to depend upon friends to supply, technology does now.
I think you need to expand on that a bit. because I sit in front of my computer or my iPad, as you know, I admit, and I can talk to people. I correspond with friends, you know, for information or to inform them about something that's happening. But I also relish and cherish the time that we're face to face, physically.
Yes, yeah, and I think that is, you know, it seemed to me that that's a natural thing, which, for instance, the kids in reading group want. But at the same time, it seemed to me that technology can lure you away from that natural desire. Before, when I was doing the same quest as you, I'd go to the library. I'd be speaking to the librarian.
Right.
She would lead me to what I wanted. I might come to you sitting in a library and say, "Nelson, what do you know about this? Because I don't know." I don't have to do that anymore because I'm sitting at home with my iPad and it does it for me far more efficiently than you.
That's right. You have the resource of the World Wide Web. You
know? Yes. Well, one of my son has a friend who studies robotics.
Okay.
And I think one of his greatest examples is this. He said, and it speaks to what you said, the problem with the modern technological society. He said, one of my friends once asked me, why I study robots? And he said, my response was, hey, consider it. He said, we're here having dinner. He said, I'd much rather have a robot here. He said, the robot will tell me the jokes I want to hear and only the jokes I want to hear. The robot. And I think in the past, you're talking about the church fathers and stuff, self-denial was always understood to be part of friendship. If I don't simply become your friend, I don't ask you to be my friend because you satisfy what I want, but I realize I'm going to have to give up some things that I want. Aquinas talked about friendship as a playfulness in austerity, in the context of austerity. And by that he meant the creativeness of conversation, but also realizing their limitations here. I'm not going to, I might correct you when you do, and that was a big part of the church fathers. You would correct a friend, but you did not insult a friend.
Right, right. And I guess, you know, in technology there are ways to insult. To insult somebody you're in contact with.
There certainly is, but at the same time, you minimize it. For instance, the kids in the high school reading group will say, yeah, I can unfriend someone, and they'll never know it.
That's true.
You know, and apparently there's some way that you can also turn off people who think they're your friends. You can actually turn off their posts so that you never have to read them, and they're not aware that they're talking to you, but
that's
you're
true,
not
that's
seeing
true.
A thing.
Very much so. Very much so. Well, yeah, that's a, in some ways, that's a dynamic that we can't have in face-to-face encounters, you know, because
yes.
we're going to get a reaction.
Yes.
You know, to when we cut off that relationship.
And I think that's the big point, that face-to-face relationships have a vulnerability, which electronics do not.
Very much so, yeah.
If I say to you, I love you, Nelson, on Facebook, easy. If I say it here, you can say, show me.
Yes, a very, very different, dynamics. Very different.
Yeah,
you know, and I just wonder where this is going to lead us in terms of our communal life.
Well, let me tell you, one of the things which has happened, and totally unexpected when I got into this, is I've come to the place where I really feel that we should stop in the church. We should stop referring to ourselves as a family of families, but instead we should speak as a community of friends. I think that we have the basis for that, as I was saying. And every time I talk to people, they've resonated with the idea.
Oh, I do. I, as a person who's never been married, you know, and yet I've found myself as a pastor of a congregation talking about the congregation as family, and yet at the same time I'm putting myself outside of that community.
Yep, and I do the same thing, and I realized what I was doing, but I didn't know how to correct it.
Right.
But this, I think, offers me a resource to do it. And even beyond the fact that, you know, that you are a bachelor, more and more people in every congregation are couples who have elected not to have children. So to speak of family in the old-style family values as having children leaves them outside of the circle.
Very much so. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. That phrase again that you use, a community.
I would say a community of friends.
Community of friends.
And I think we all have to work on it because I'm not sure. But I certainly think that that's better than family of families. One of my retired pastor friends said that also is important because what has become known in society now as family values is not necessarily what we want to teach.
That's right. Exactly. Oh, okay. Yeah. I can't believe our time has run out.
Oh, this is fun.
Yeah, but very intriguing. And I look for more of your work in this area. This area of friendship. My guest today has been Pastor Fritz Faltz, Pastor Emeritus, St. James Lutheran Church in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, and we've been talking about friendship. For the Seminary Explorers, this is Nelson Strobert. Have a good day.
You have been listening to The Seminary Explorers from historic Seminary Ridge in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, a production of Gettysburg Seminary. We invite you to visit our website at www.ltsg.edu. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of Gettysburg Seminary or the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America.